Glyphosate in oats and why organic matters for some more than others. Could your genetics make glyphosate in oats a bigger problem than you think? If I had to pin my work on one bread, it would be a sourdough porridge bread, a long, slow fermented diversity bread with an unctuous, open, sticky, irresistible crumb and that amazing marshmallow texture. It's a signature of mine, and it's loaded with nourishment on every level. My porridges are always built around diversity, but at the core of them is either oats or barley. Bread is a fibre delivery system. It's the way I first describe bread to my students here at the Sourdough School. And I always pause for a moment and let that sink in. What I want in that moment is for them to reframe almost everything they think they understand about bread. I use porridge in my bread for multiple reasons. Yes, for diversity, but texture and shelf life. But the most important part is the fiber that feeds your microbes and the beta glucans that come with that. I also specify that your porridge must be organic. And I remember this landing 20 years ago when I was teaching as elitist. Now, I appreciate that organic is more expensive. But once you begin to look at your bread through the lens of fiber, nourishment, and delivering your key metabolites for your gut to function correctly, you will start to see that the way in which your oats are grown and handled is actually central to the levels of nourishment in your bread. Now, there are always people that dismiss organic, and there is always an argument for cheap, affordable food. But one of the most peculiar pricing anomalies right now is that you will find oats online that are selling for less than conventional oats. It's worth exploring, not least because it cuts straight to the most common defense of conventionally grown food, which is that organic is a luxury that most people cannot afford. Check out your supermarkets and compare porridge oats that are sold under familiar, colourful, branded boxes against the organic equivalent to brands that are sold by Suma, Whole Foods Online, and Homedods, for example. And you'll find that the direct Whole Foods suppliers selling oats not printed in fancy boxes, but simple bags of grain, often are grown organically without the use of glyphosate, and they cost the same, if not less, than conventional oats sold under these brand names on the supermarket shelf. It's a challenge, I guess, because you assume the supermarket will be cheaper. But what you're often paying for is packaging, shelf space, marketing, and of course, the supermarket profits. And the farming and the agroeconomic practices have very little to do with the price or the health benefits of the oats inside that packet. Now, this matters. Why? Because it changes the conversation about access. When someone tells me that they can't afford to take the extra to buy organic flour or organic oats for their family, I take this seriously because there are many people for whom this is the situation and it's genuinely tough out there. But for a great many people, though, it's simply an obstacle of habit. It's shelf placement, it's routine, it's the way we've been taught to associate supermarkets with affordability and convenience. And actually, we think about the Whole Food shops as being a luxury. So when I'm teaching, I ask my students to step up and to start to source their staples wherever possible. Oats, flour, beans, all their pulses directly from the farmer, all the whole food suppliers, because actually you're normally paying less per kilo than you would for the equivalent from the big branded supermarkets. And I think it's really important to be making your bread and feeding your family with grain that has not been desiccated with glyphosate pre-harvest. So why organic oats matter more for some people, especially if you have this common gene variant. Well, that brings me neatly to the crux of why I'm sharing this. When something eaten every single day, this small shift in sourcing has a disproportionate effect, in my opinion. When you have oats as part of your daily, perhaps porridge for breakfast or your oat bread at lunchtime, day after day, year after year, it means that the cumulative load of those grains and the way in which they were grown or weren't grown adds up across the decades. And for some of us, I believe that that cumulative effect has far more impact than for others. I think for around half of the people that are reading this or listening to me, it's relevant. And I want to introduce you to one of the most common gene variants in the human population. It's called a GSTM1. It's part of a family of enzymes responsible for a process called glutathione conjugation. Essentially, it tags harmful compounds in the body so that it can recognize them and remove them. And this is one of the key tools that your liver uses for what's known as phase 2 detoxification, the stage where reactive or toxic molecules are neutralized in preparation for excretion. Now, I've been baking bread for decades without the tools to really explain many of the health outcomes in good bread. But there are two things that gave me these tools, and they arrived together: nutrigenetics and the gut microbiome. That's when I seriously began to understand more about the gut and using nutrigenetics for personalized targeted nourishment. Now, I've always looked at the way our ingredients are grown, but these gave me the tools to see how our ingredients affect individual people differently. It was really then that I realized that there's so much more to healthy bread than the instruction just to eat more fiber. If you're eating bread 2 or 3 times a day, then that bread, when made from conventionally grown whole grain flour, carries glyphosate residues in its outer layers. And you are adding every day a small but consistent chemical load to your system with every single meal. This isn't a dramatic, acute exposure. This is a steady, cumulative one that starts with your toast every day in the morning. Now, depending on the population studied, it's thought that somewhere between 40 and 60% of the population carry this GSTM1 null deletion. It means roughly half of you are in exactly the same position as me, and you simply do not know it yet. So when I look at bread through a nutrigenetics lens, and I consider the way that we make our bread, I'm not simply teaching bread making. I'm asking that my students consider the interaction between the components in their bread and their individual biology, and how this relates to the way that they bake and what they bake with consistently over the years and over the decades. And that's because it's about understanding this cumulative effect of bread and how, when this is eaten every day, it has a far greater impact than almost any other food. This is particularly relevant, in my opinion, when it comes to glyphosate and how we approach oats and fermentation, and the way that I look at the ingredients that I teach and share with my family and make my bread with here at the Sourdough School. In 2015, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, and that was part of the research arm of the World Health Organization, classified glyphosate as group 2A, probably carcinogenic to humans. It was a classification that rested on limited evidence in humans, but there was sufficient evidence in experimental animals, strong evidence of genotoxicity and human signal was strongest for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in farmers where agricultural workers who had been occupationally exposed to glyphosate over many years. Now that classification has been contested. And many different bodies, including the European Food Safety Authority, have reviewed the same body of evidence and concluded that, well, glyphosate is unlikely to pose carcinogenic risk at typical dietary exposures. And on that basis, well, they renewed glyphosate's approval for another 10 years in 2023. And in the UK, that remains authorised, including for use on pre-harvest grain, on cereal crops that includes wheat and oats. And the level that the regulators and dietary residues have been agreed on is genuinely contested. Why? Well, because none of it resolves a question that matters, that for some people eating bread every day, this is a cumulative dietary load. And the results or the impact is simply not backed by randomized control trials. The research hasn't been done. And it probably can't be done. Why? Well, you can't randomize human beings eating residue-laden breads for half a century to see what happens to them. So the question sits in a gap between the regulators. They say there's no evidence of harm at the doses we're exposed to. And then you've got the courts in the USA awarding billions to people, and where the jurors have found that the cancers have been caused by these chemicals in the USA. Bread, however, is eaten every day, often multiple times a day, by a huge portion of the population. It's a staple, our daily bread. And it means that any interaction between the components and the ingredients and your individual biology is happening repeatedly. Breakfast, lunch, snacks and supper, constantly and consistently over years and decades. This matters. This is a cumulative load. And I'll keep saying that the effects of this is going to be far greater than any other food because of this consistency. And so if someone with a GSTM1 null variant processing extra residues, chemicals and toxins through a clearance system that is already missing one of its key tools, the gap I have just described is not a comfortable place to sit in. Especially nowadays, where I work more with individuals over a longer period of time. I teach bread and baking as preventative health. Many of my students work through we call the Proven Bread Program. But before I go any further into how you can support your GSTM1 null and reduce that toxic load, I want to go into a little bit more context of glyphosate and why this matters more. So I want to look at the surprising way that glyphosate actually ends up in your oats in the first place and why it lingers. When I'm chatting with my students, I noticed over the years, from almost all the discussions, that they assume that the pesticides are applied to the plant during the growing season, and that by harvest time, with the rain and the sunshine, all the crop is clean. But the reality is much less comfortable than that. In the UK, glyphosate is routinely sprayed onto wheat and oat crops in the weeks immediately before harvest. Now, this isn't just to kill the weeds. It's designed to kill the crop itself. Why? Well, this practice is called desiccation. It's chemically accelerating the dying of the plants so the farmers can harvest them up to 2 weeks early. This standardizes the drying of the grain, it improves the consistency of the yields, and it's an industrial convenience. And oats consistently show higher glyphosate residues than any of the other grains, including wheat and barley and the other common cereal grains. And this is true across every major testing program over the last decade. And that includes studies by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency that was published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, and including in the US Environmental Working Group testing of breakfast cereals, and the UK citizen science studies of supermarkets and porridge oats. All of them come back with the same picture, that oats are at the top of the list when it comes to glyphosate residues. This is in some ways not just because of the way that oats are structurally, but also because of this farming practice. The pre-harvest desiccation with glyphosate is far more heavily used on oats than other cereals. And that's because oats ripen unevenly. If you look at a field of oats, you will see some of them are golden on one patch, and on another patch, they can still be green. And so by the oats ripening unevenly, the farmer, by spraying on just before harvest, it gets all of them to dry down so they're ready for combining at the same time. So there is a question of regulation here, and maximum residues limited for oats is set by the European Union. It sets it to 20 milligrams per kilo, which frankly is many times higher than for other foods. The structure of the grain too seems to play a part in how it holds on to glyphosate. The husk and the bran in oats seems to hold on to the residue of glyphosate, and the rolling and flaking and milling process for oats just doesn't remove that outer layer sufficiently. This is why I've been so insistent for so long about sourcing your grains, especially your oats, organically. If you eat porridge in the morning, or you make a porridge bread, which I encourage you to do for your lunch and for your snacks and in your bread, then the oats that come from conventionally grown, glyphosate desiccated, means that you're eating glyphosate twice a day, every single day, every day, from the food category that consistently shows the highest residues of any grain on the shelf. Think about that for just a moment. And yet, there is so much work by many different campaigns, including Pan UK and the Soil Association, which have campaigned against the use of glyphosate on our crops. And yet it still continues. The oat problem, why it matters. I want to bring you back to oats. There's so much information and misinformation about oats that it's difficult to pick through what matters. But oats matter specifically because I think they're one of the most misunderstood foods in the current nutritional conversation. Like barley, they are remarkable for delivering beta-glucans, and that supports cardiovascular health. Now, cardiovascular disease is part of my story, and the beta-glucans and the soluble fiber found in oats are some of the most robustly evidenced in dietary tools that I have for managing an inherited risk. So oats aren't optional for me. They are directly supporting preventative healthcare, cardiovascular disease for me. I bake them, I make porridge with them, I ferment them, and I try and get them in my diet every single day. They're not just about unctuous, delicious marshmallow bread. They're not just some nice addition to my diet. They are integral and structural as preventative healthcare. My grandfather, Sidney Hume, my father's father, had multiple heart attacks, and cardiovascular disease runs through my family. And porridge is one of the breads that I make, knowing consciously that it will have a meaningful impact on my own health and my family's health. It's not just theoretical, but personally. So for someone designing therapeutic bread and those systems, the most interesting aspect of these oats is the beta-glucans, because they act both directly and indirectly through bile acid metabolism, indirectly through microbiome fermentation, and that soluble fiber. And those dual mechanisms is why they remain one of the most robust fiber interventions for cardiovascular disease risk reduction, especially when fermented. Oats deliver polyphenols, and the prebiotic fibers are well reported as a means to feed your gut microbes, and when prepared correctly, a sustainable, stable source of energy that supports rather than disrupts blood sugar balance. That is important when prepared correctly. So it seems like a pretty straightforward case to me that organic really matters in oats because I must eat them. So coming back to that GSTM1 null deletion, it means that I don't produce an enzyme. My detoxification system is still functioning, but I have a lot less capacity on this really important pathway for handling oxidative stress and certain environmental toxicants or toxins. Several population studies show that people with a GSTM1 null deletion experience, well, higher levels of cardiovascular disease, higher levels of oxidative stress, inflammation, and DNA damage when exposed to environmental pollution and pollutants compared to individuals who carry the full functional gene. Now, this gene doesn't determine whether the toxins enter your body, but what it does is it influences how effectively your body neutralizes the what we call reactive intermediates. In other words, how we get rid of the toxins. Now, glyphosate is somewhat different mechanistically. Actually, we excrete a large proportion of glyphosate unchanged in our urine, and it's not detoxified through that GSTM1 conjugation. At this point, you're wondering why I'm even talking about GSTM1 when it's not relevant to the glyphosate leaving our bodies. It's a fair question, but here's where the connection is not straightforward. Even though glyphosate is not primarily detoxified through the GSTM1 pathway, we excrete this large proportion of it in our urine. On the face of it, it seems like it's irrelevant. But the irony that the very food that should be protecting your heart is actually straining your detoxification is not lost on me. This is part of the story. The relevance to glyphosate is indirect and it matters. And that's because the experimental and epidemiological work suggests that glyphosate exposure contributes to oxidative stress, mitochondrial disruption, and disturbance of the gut microbiome. Now, while these are not the same as the direct chemical detoxification via that GSTM1 null, they are what we call downstream effects. It's a stress on the body that your body has to manage at the same time. And if you have got an already limited glutathione buffering capacity, and that's already reduced because of your GSTM1 deletion, your physiological tolerance for additional strains is lower. And so your system essentially has less spare capacity to absorb disruption. In functional nutritional logic, this is straightforward. It's about reducing your total toxic load so that your detoxification systems are not constantly working at their limit. So one of the ways that you can lower your exposure is effectively to lower the pesticide and agrochemical exposure, particularly when bread is eaten daily and in significant quantities. Now, this doesn't mean that automatically that your bread becomes detoxifying, and it doesn't mean that non-organic bread is inherently less harmful. But what it does is it reduces significantly a category of agrochemicals that is an environmental burden to your system. And I believe that eaten over a lifetime, that reduction becomes meaningful, especially when you look at your family history, your genetics, and look at it as preventative healthcare. So, looking at the extraordinary nutritional benefits of oats, they're real. But oats drenched in herbicide residue is not, in my view, the same food as an organic version. The gut microbiome that we are trying to nourish and deliver beta-glucans and prebiotic fibers is an ecosystem that is most likely to be disrupted by repeated chemical exposure. It's a contradiction that I'm just not willing to bake with. I'm not going to make bread with grains that are saturated with agrochemicals. And it's specifically why I recommend going to Homedods and looking for organic oats and looking to work with farmers who've got seriously good credentials in growing and supplying organic, sustainably grown pulses and grains, because the oats that you eat matter, and so does how it is grown. So, coming back to what this common gene means for you. So, the GSTM1 null is silent. There are no symptoms. You're not going to feel it. You're not going to notice it. You're not going to have any reason to suspect it. But half the population carries this, and most people will never know. It's not a disease. It's not a deficiency in the ordinary sense. It's simply a variation in how effectively you your detoxification pathways function. But in the world, that pathway is quietly being called upon more and more every day by the food levels of toxicity from chemicals on our plate. And I think for that reason alone, it's a genetic particularly worth knowing about. Now, if I test someone, the first thing I recommend to anyone with this gene is to avoid agrochemicals and chemicals wherever possible. The second is to increase their levels of polyphenols in their bread every day. Bread, when it's baked with intentional and loaded full of polyphenols, is a powerful way to deliver the nutrients to supply and support clearance through other routes and the fiber that's needed as well to clear and detoxify your system through your natural digestion is the best route for your body to do this job. And this is where Diversity Blend Triple X Mixer comes in. It's the third of the blends developed and milled and sold by Homedods, and it's in the UK. And it's the blend that I've formulated with a very high polyphenol density, specifically with this in mind. Inside the bag, you'll find high polyphenol flour blended with ingredients such as black wheat and black barley. These are grains that are rich in anthocyanins. They're deep purples and red pigments, and some of them are the most studied polyphenols in human nutrition, along with spelt and rye and emma and lentils and peas and quinoa and poppy seeds. To those grains and pulses and nettles, they're full of plant polyphenols and chlorophyll and hibiscus flowers with their bright rose-coloured anthocyanins, and coffee and cocoa husk for its flavanols. And every one of those ingredients in that flower carries a different family of polyphenols and supports a different community in your gut. And in turn, those polyphenols help support your body's clearance pathways and ability to mop up those free radicals and support clearing oxidative stress. So, how to make a simple porridge with your Triple X blend? Using Triple X blend is pretty easy. I think of it as being a flour like a concentrated washing up liquid. You can simply drop Diversity Blend Mixer into any sourdough recipe in your repertoire, any of your favorite recipes, by replacing up to 30% of the existing flour in your recipe. There's no special technique. It's not a separate method. You simply swap a third of your usual flour for the blend and carry on as you would normally. I'd highly recommend, though, that your dough is given a long, slow fermentation, because the legumes really do need to be broken down for ease of digestion, and sourdough fermentation does that. Occasionally, you may need to add another small amount of water. If you find that your dough is a little tight, you can let it down with another 20 or 30 grams of water, because it's sometimes quite thirsty. The polyphenols, the minerals, the fibers in that blend are mostly bound up in the bran. And that water and the seed and the fermentation swells up the cell walls and breaks down the plant as part of the fermentation. And that slow work of the wild yeast and those lactic acid bacteria, given time and temperature and patience of a proper overnight proof, helps break down those bonds, and that releases more of those nutrients in a form that your gut can help absorb. Think of fermentation as being pre-digestion. And given that fermentation, the same loaf essentially means that the vitamins and the minerals and those polyphenols that are so supportive become a more bioavailable delivery system of everything that you have put into your loaf. The other way that I use this in my daily bread is I make a porridge with it. I take 3 heaped tablespoons of Diversity Blend Triple X and I mix it with equal 3 heaped tablespoons of oats. And I cook them gently together with water until they soften into a thick, creamy porridge. I end up roughly with around 200 grams of porridge. I make sure that I fold that cooled, cooked down porridge into my dough as part of that bread mix. Normally, after I add salt, the grains and the pulses in that are partially already cooked at this point. And that is what brings to your crumb that unctuous, marshmallow, gorgeous texture that I love, that I talked about at the beginning of this conversation. And this is about feeding your gut. It is about everything this blend was designed, delivered in a way that becomes part of your bread. It's feeding the crumb. And opening up that structure with a simple, delicious, effective, and affordable way to lift those levels of nourishment to support your gut and your detoxification clearance pathways. Now, how to find out if you have a GSTM1? If you want to find out whether or not you carry the deletion, that information is available through nutrigenetics testing. At the Sourdough School, I work with LifeCode GX, and I use the Nutrient Core Panel, which includes that GSTM1 deletion, along with another 112 different genes relevant to how your body processes food and inflammation and responds to environmental exposures through the reports that I use. If you'd like to explore your own results and what that might mean for your bread and how you eat it, I do personalized consultations and they are available. Understanding your genetics doesn't mean you have to overhaul everything. Sometimes it simply means that you are making well-informed choices that happen to matter quite a lot in your everyday daily food and your habits. Parents reading this, I hope you've already done that mental arithmetic, because if roughly half the adults carry that GSTM1 deletion, then so too do half the children. And I know if your kids are like mine, they eat a great deal of bread and that is relative to their body weight, especially as they're growing and they're at different stages of development when the gut microbiome and the immune system and their detoxification pathways are still maturing. I'm not raising alarm, but I do think that this is a really good reason to take the sourcing of your grain, your flour, your oats seriously as you are parenting children whose systems are still developing. And I guess what I'm trying to say here is when we bake bread, we're baking for the people we care about We're baking for the people we love. We're baking because we like to share our bread. And I think it's worth taking the sourcing of your grains seriously from early on, rather than treating it as something to be considered later. And as a side issue, I would put organic grains in as a foundation into your everyday food. I think it's really important to say that glyphosate is not the only residue worth talking about. It is one that receives the most attention because it's probably the most widely applied herbicide in the world, and that pre-harvest desiccation means it ends up directly on the grain. But look, there are many different herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, residues on grain. The USDA survey cited earlier actually recorded 87 different chemicals in winter wheat alone. So I think you've got to think about the GSTM1 pathway as being relevant to a broader class of environmental toxins, not just to glyphosate specifically. Choosing organic addresses a much wider picture, not simply one chemical. And then there's also this question of fermentation. I've come across an awful lot of nonsense recently, especially on Instagram. Sourdough fermentation does not remove glyphosate residues from flour. I want to be really clear about this here. There's been some very odd claims recently about that, but long slow fermentation does not support the creation of a clean grain. It does support the creation of resistant starch. And of course, you're avoiding some of the emulsifiers and enzymes in conventional bread. It does increase the bioavailability of minerals, it does reduce phytate levels, and it does produce beneficial organic acids. Sourdough also delivers postbiotic compounds that can support the gut lining. But a disrupted microbiome is one of the downstream effects associated with glyphosate exposure. Fermentation, if you like, works in the opposite direction. So fermentation is not a remedy for what should or should not be in the flour in the first place. Fermentation is a meaningful part of the way in which the bread is made. It's the process of the bread, and that can only work on the ingredients from what your bread is made from. So if you want to test your own GSTM1 status and you want to get personalized flour advice, you can certainly get in touch with me and find out more about personalized consultations. For those of you who want to deepen their expertise, want to dig deeper, whether it's for personal health, professional practice, teaching, I run workshops here at the Sourdough School. I have a fantastic 2-year diploma that starts every January that provides a rigorous foundation in all aspects of baking, eating, and sharing bread, including understanding the differences between regenerative grain systems, organic grain systems, and the science of fermentation, and of course, baking, eating, and sharing delicious bread that nourishes. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to me read the article here to you that I've written. One of the things I would like to finish with is that all reasonable care is taken whenever I write about health aspects of bread. But all the information that I write about and that these articles contained are not intended in any way to take the place of treatment by a qualified medical practitioner. If you are having digestive issues, you must seek medical advice. If you're in any doubt about any medical condition, you must speak to a medical professional. Any application of the ideas and information contained on this website or from listening to this podcast is totally at your sole discretion and risk. If you'd like to engage with me or share any information, please feel free to add any comments on the article and or share your loaves with me on Instagram. You can tag me in with hashtag Sourdough School at Sourdough School on Instagram, The Sourdough Club or Sourdough Club, I think. You think I know my own Instagram handle by now. Or Vanessa Kimball. And have a wonderful day. I hope you get to get your hands in dough and crack some amazing breads out of the oven. And just take a moment just to think about that connection, that you are the change. Your hands, when you get your hands in the dough, you are the person that transforms those ingredients into bread that nourishes. And that means to me, you are the change, you are the hero, you are the person that is nourishing the people you love. And that is why it is a huge privilege and a great joy to write and share and teach with people who care about the bread that they bake, eat, and share every day.